Hello everyone, welcome to Cyber Inspiration Podcast. My name is Evgeny. I have been around cybersecurity for the last 20 years and I have a lot of experience working with a variety of cybersecurity vendors. My main work is vendor consulting and cybersecurity advisory for companies. As part of my passion in technology and cyber, I've been intrigued to learn how a company starts. I started the podcast to understand the thinking process and what motivated people to start their own company. This podcast is affiliated with Security Architecture Podcast.
Cassie here to talk about her book, and it's very, very exciting because I'm very, very intrigued to learn about the creation of this book. This is a very, very big problem we're having right now, and it's kind of blew up for the last couple of years. So very excited. Please tell me about yourself, and please tell me about the book.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for having me. I have been at a company called Schneider Electric for almost 14 years, and during that time, I've been in different roles. But over the last 8 years, been specifically focused on cybersecurity and working with our suppliers, I've realized as our very secure product security, just say environment that we have here, not everybody was familiar with product security and software supply chain security. So when I was working with our suppliers, asking them about their posture for product security and specifically where they're doing development work for us, or if we're purchasing something for us, and I kept referencing NIST documentation or some other different things and saying, oh, go look at this Microsoft SDL or something of that nature. And they didn't have the background. So I started to collect all of this material. We follow internally IEC 62443-4-1, which is a certified secure development lifecycle. And we're at the highest level of maturity, but they generally are not working with this. So I was putting together all these links and everything with our suppliers or companies we bought, and finally decided that I needed to write a book. And I was working with a AppSec group community called the Purple Book. And we were writing a digital book about application security, and they wanted me to write a process chapter. And I said, I really want to write about software supply chain security. And they're like, what's this? Because this was pre-SolarWinds. And so I said, I really want to cover the other pieces of that about application security and product security that aren't normally covered. And they had a ghost editor after I wrote the chapter. They had a ghost editor. And I met with him and I said, oh, there's so much more. You could fill a whole book. And he said, you should write that. And I said, I don't have time to write a book. And he's like, well, I've published with both O'Reilly Media and Wiley. And I think this would be a good fit for O'Reilly Media. He introduced me to the editors. I put in my book proposal and they agreed. So it was the first, you know, book. In fact, there's a couple books that have released since then. And actually they had contacted O'Reilly and they said, oh, we already have one in the works. So that's how it all came about. It was quite easier for me because of the connections than it would have been for some other folks, but that's how it came about.
Great. This is a very quick story, but I'm wondering how long it took from the beginning to the end.
Overall, it took me about 18 months to write the book. It was about 6 months of working through the proposal, making sure that I wanted to work with O'Reilly. I was thinking about self-publishing. I'm glad I didn't do it. I would have never published if I had self-published. And then I started in June of 2022, and I finished and provided the last bit of files in October. We did final edits in November through January.
It's interesting because I spoke with people before, and by the way, I'm working on my own book as well. And there's many different opinions between self-publishing and publishing with someone. There's pros and cons. I don't think it's right or wrong. It's just different pros and cons. I think there's sometimes easier, sometimes less easier to work with one. But it definitely takes time. Doesn't matter if you're doing it by yourself or not. When you're thinking about the book, did you have a target audience in mind?
Yes. And that's some of the difficulty with this book. I wrote it for two kind of very different audiences. I wrote it for someone who is building applications, but generally is thinking quite a bit about just the developer mindset. Oh, I know how to do the build process, but there's so much more. You've got to worry about the infrastructure of the development environments, and you've got to work about the distribution process, because unless you're building, for example, maybe mobile or SaaS platform, I work a lot with OT and industrial IoT, and so you have all the manufacturing pieces associated with that. So I wrote it for someone who is actually creating software. But I actually wrote it, secondly, for CISOs and people in procurement and CIOs, anybody wanting to purchase a product that they need to be concerned with more than just standard cybersecurity. Because when you're purchasing a product, you think, what is their IT security? But people don't really realize, if they've not built applications securely, what goes into it and what they need to think about. So it's got a whole section that specifically for if you're purchasing from a supplier, here's the things you need to be concerned about. You need to ask them what they're doing for secure development. And it also gives them information that says, even if they follow, let's say do a SOC 2 report, it doesn't cover secure development lifecycle. So there's a lot of those pieces that they think the Cloud Security Alliance and all of those put in there, but it doesn't cover that at all. And that's why I put that in the book, so that someone with a CISO background or a CIO background may not know that all of these don't imply that it's a securely developed product. And that's what they need to look at.
I think in this case, there may be another category, not just the CISOs, is all the risk managers that work in part of third party compliance. And they need to understand that many companies that help you to assess the vendor, how secure they are before you buy them, and they have different frameworks. We're not going to name the tools right now, but there's a lot of go-go's there. So they may read the book and add questionnaires or add questions or dialogues to what's there. I'm wondering if we're going to see companies that actually play in the space to adding this to their products, or will help companies to show that they're actually doing secure development by design and not try to kind of prove that they're actually doing it.
Right. And this has been a challenge, because that's really how a lot of it I got into it, is because I would receive questionnaires and they'd ask about our platforms and not a single question about how we built the product. And then when I was evaluating suppliers, I went to these third-party risk management firms and I said, can you add these secure development lifecycle questions and these kinds of investigations? And they couldn't. And so we created an internal process and an evidence-based review process, because we can't just go by what people answer on a questionnaire. We want to see that. So for example, I asked one supplier, please provide me your secure coding rules. They provided me coding standards, but not secure coding standards, which is very different. And so we worked with them on what would be high quality secure coding standards. Then they had to train their teams and so on and so forth. And that's really important, is that you don't get that from just a standard assessment or third-party risk. So I do think that there's going to be other groups. And there's something that CISA just released called the Software Attestation Form, which is for secure development. And what this, it's going to be required if you're selling to the U.S. federal government. But in general, it's asking, do you follow secure development lifecycle practices? Do you do vulnerability management? Do you do these kinds of things? And we're seeing that in the EU Cyber Resilience Act too. So I think people are starting to realize they should be asking these questions, but there's not as many third parties that are qualified. It's hard to find somebody that can both evaluate evidence on secure development lifecycle and the IT cybersecurity posture.
When you're writing the book, I'm thinking that probably some staff, you're like, I'm not really sure about this part. I think it should work like that, but maybe not. Did you validate it? How did you validate it? What was the process to understand that this is what you're writing is agreeable? Maybe not for everyone, but at least majority of the people.
Yeah. Well, I read a lot in order to make sure that I was accurate on everything. So I first picked technical reviewers that had certain skill sets. So I picked someone that was from the automotive industry that understood closed systems. I was very familiar with IoT and OT, and I had a reviewer from my company that was very familiar with firmware embedded. And then I specifically targeted and found a technical reviewer who was familiar with the cloud and AppSec space that could really be able to have that difference. So I had computer science backgrounds. And the book is not written so you have to be a technical person. For example, when I talk about cryptography and the importance of it, I provide those examples. I have over 200 references available in the book. I've got 400 in my reference sheet. Not all of them were included. So I studied and made sure I understood the concepts so that I could explain it to someone. But then if they needed more information, they go further. So if you're a cryptography expert, it's going to be, you're going to be like, oh, that's basic. But what's important is if you're a CISO, and you're wanting to put an OT product in your manufacturing plant, for example, if you don't understand about hardware platform modules and how people might do signing more than just standard code signing, but firmware signing and PKI and TPMs for trusted platform modules, those are all really important concepts when you might be looking at certain architectures. But if they don't come from a development background, or even if they do come from a development background, they may not have that background. And that's why I provided it in a book. So I had to learn some pieces that I knew were important as part of the security just overall framework, and having those reviewers sort of validate that as I'm going through it. And they provided great suggestions too.
You're describing a lot of information. This is like mind-blowing. And my mind is keep thinking, okay, sounds like I'm like almost 80-20 rules. True. Okay, I'm probably learning 80% and then I'm writing 20% of the time. So my question here, tell me, how do you actually write? What is the process? Are you scheduling time in your calendar? Are you get to the point when your buffer is overflow with information and you're going writing that? I was recording someone before that Ross that basically had scheduled time on the weekend and he's like raining, shining, I'm writing the book. If it doesn't go, I will go write it and it will go until I'm writing it. So tell me about your process.
Yeah, I could not schedule it within the day. I really had to have that focus time where I knew I would have usually 2 or 3 hours at minimum so that I could get into the swing of it. So honestly, a lot of it was me staying in my home office and I would be like, okay, I'm going to work. I'm finished with my work. I had to shut down my work email and such. And then I would focus on writing it. But I spent a lot of time on the weekends. And some of it is if I was traveling, I would end up staying 2 weeks. For example, I'd stay in DC 2 weeks and dedicate the whole weekend toward writing. In fact, that last batch, that last deadline that I had, I was working just, it was, I think I only slept a few hours that full weekend on the third draft because I had a deadline. I needed to get it. I want to make sure get through my reference. But it was hard when I first started. When I'm writing, I'm trying to, like when you write an email, you're trying to write it the way you want it to sound from the beginning. And I found that was stopping me. I was having a hard time getting into the swing of it once I started a section. And what I realized is that it's easier for me to, as if teaching it. So I would actually started recording the sections into my memo recorder and throwing it through a transcription process. And then I could go back and edit and add writing. But I was getting too hung up when I just had a blank, you know, section. I knew what the section was going to be titled, but I was like, should I include this piece or this piece? And I was getting in my head too much. So then I went into that free flow and the revisions as I would do it, I'd get it all out there. And then I'd start back and adding more details like, oh, I should move this here and this there. And that helped a lot because probably for the first 8 months, I only got through maybe 2 chapters, maybe onto the third. It took me forever to write them because I was running into that blank screen the whole time.
You mentioned ghostwriter. So did you end up using him book or you did the introduction?
Yeah, that was for the purple book chapter. Now in O'Reilly, I had a development editor. So she would read through the book as it would go through. And she noticed at the beginning when I was first writing, I was making leaps of logic. So I would jump from section to section. And so I got much better at doing the transitions once I realized, oh, I was doing that because I'm much more of a thinking objects. Here's my object block. I'm going to get this done and this done. And it didn't have really a flow. And she helped with that piece. But by the time I was in the later chapters, when I realized I was doing that, I could do that more myself. So I did have the development editor and then I had the technical reviewers.
Isn't this interesting that we think in a certain way? And we describe in a certain way, and then we have a blank stare on somebody else. What? And then we realize the way we explain to them is not in the language they understand. Audio, video, kinesthetic, or whatever it is. And sometimes we blame the vendors a lot when they're doing and pushing, but is this always the vendors? Or we don't teach them correctly how to talk to us because we consume the information differently.
Right.
But it is quite interesting. Great. This is quite an interesting process of your writing. I am sure during the time when you're writing, there were some moments, especially if it was 18 months, when you're like, why am I here? Why am I doing this? Why am I not in the beach in Hawaii? What did you do? How did you push yourself back or came back to writing?
Yeah, I did have those. I had that and imposter syndrome. I think on the first, you know, I'm never going to get done. I keep on having to delay. Life happens. I have work to do. Maybe it's not worth putting it out there. I did it once to the editor. I said, I don't know if I can do this. And she's like, you're doing great. So she was very much a cheerleader. And same with my husband. He's like, no, you can do it. I'm like, I've got so much to do. It's taking up so much time. So there was that point where when you're less than halfway done, it's hard to envision getting it done. And that's why I know that if I try to self-publish, I need those deadlines. I need someone waiting for that commitment, because then I have that sense of guilt. And then the imposter syndrome is doing this going, I don't know if I'm the right one to be writing this. Maybe I'm too focused on this area. Is it going to be useful for other people? Are they going to find value in it? There's a lot of time, because you never write a book for the money. I was doing it because I was trying to fill a gap that I was just seeing every single day where folks did not understand, like, the entire world that we're having to look at from a product security. So I'd be reaffirmed when I would talk to people and I'd mention, oh, I'm writing a book. Like, I was in a meeting when I was starting the book, or pretty much into it, specifically with CISA, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. And I had just written about trusted source material and open source. And I was explaining it to them and they goes, I really want to read this book when you have it out. It was really good to hear that my explaining it, but they were like, yes, we need that kind of material out there. So that helped a lot.
If you can go back 18 months ago, 2 years ago, would you do anything differently?
Yes, I would have tried to figure out better how to write quicker, because once I got the first draft done, everything else went really fast. I'm much better at revising and everything. And the second thing is, I will never do a book by myself again. If I do another book, I will have to have a co-author, because having, again, that accountability is really important. And when my technical reviewers provided feedback, I'm like, oh, that's great. I didn't think about that, or I need to add that. And I had told my O'Reilly editor at the beginning, I said, the first draft of the book, I'm going to double the size of the book by the time the reviewers did. And it is true. The first draft was very limited for all of the different pieces, because I need that brainstorming that technical reviewers can provide and saying, oh, did you think about adding this? Or here's this piece. And as I was going back through those sections, it would make me think about new information that I might have forgotten. So I really would have benefited from having a second author, where we could drive some of those points from the beginning to get the first cut out much faster.
Think you mentioned that if you're going to write another book, it will be with someone. So is there any ideas of another book, or you need a break?
Yeah, no, I think I've got an idea for one. It needs to be in the right level of audience. So from a standpoint of maybe even going one level above from a board perspective, maybe something even just shorter. I don't know yet if it's a full book or if it's just an article specifically for board, because there's a lot of material now for cybersecurity and board level, but they don't talk about product security and what's going on. So I have a conversation quite frequently with CISOs and others. They're like, what can we do? I'm like, be prepared, because your suppliers will fail you. Things are going to happen. What happens if tomorrow Microsoft Teams goes down for a month? We've seen some big suppliers have some big areas where their operations or the product has not been online. And are you able to manage your business without it? Because I was in the area and the field where disaster recovery, we were doing all of that and getting all prepped. But now that so many people are dependent on the cloud environments and their native cloud native companies, they can't exist. Your internet's down, you're this, you're that, you're completely offline. And can you survive that?
Isn't we saying that pretty much if AWS East goes down, half of the world goes down with them, not something like that?
Yeah, yes.
If I remember
and being
correctly.
prepared for that. So I don't think that there is enough being done from an enterprise risk management level about these problems. So that, but it's not a big audience, right? So from a book standpoint, I probably won't go too much deeper. I've talked to different people. There's some books about how to create a product security organization. I've been a subject matter expert on some people who've interviewed some pieces. So I've got some ideas, but there's nothing that's really calling me that I felt needed something like this book did.
Do you expect an audio version of the book?
Yeah, I've been asked about that, but O'Reilly has a certain, there's got to be a certain level of sales, I think, and demand before it will be required. So I hope so, but at this point in time, not. And so far, I haven't been, they haven't suggested translating to any other languages too, but I know it's for sale in many other countries. I'd like to see it translated to Japanese, but for audiobook, I really hope there was, and I was all prepared to do it myself, but they bring in a third party to do it.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I think it's definitely very interesting. The book sounds like a very interesting combination between a technical, I didn't read myself yet, so it's on my to-do list, between a technical book and a management book as well. So
yes.
A lot of information for everyone. And I think in my mind, even if you're a founder of a company, you probably want to glance and understand what you need to think about it. Maybe
yes.
not you doing it yourself, but guide your CTO that this is what you need to expect from them.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely.
Thank you. I'll show the book again. We'll put a link definitely in the recording. It will be airing soon. I hope so. And I'll see you soon at RSA.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here.
Thank you.